This is the final part. This is the final part of our Love is Blank series. I've enjoyed it. I think it's been a good conversation, and on to more better, bigger things. And but we're going to end with a, I think this is going to be a good one. I hope so. And so Ephesians chapter 1. And we're going to look at verses 3 through 5. I'm reading this in the famed Message translation of the Bible. And so you can follow along in your version, whatever you have. But this is how the Message translation puts it. Ephesians 1, 3 through 5. How blessed is God? And what a blessing He is. He's the Father of our Master Jesus Christ and makes us all... He takes us all to the high places of blessing in Him. Long before He laid down the earth's foundations, He had us in mind. He had settled on us as the focus of His love, to be made whole and holy by His love. Long, long ago, He decided to adopt us into His family through Jesus Christ. What a pleasure He took in planning this. Today, we're going to end with this. Love is family. And so that's our conversation today. Love is family. If you go back to the beginning of the Bible, it starts off beautiful. It's poetic. Genesis chapter 1, God's creating everything, heavens and earth. And it's all beautiful. In fact, it says, after everything He makes, it is good, and it is good, it is good. And then He saw that man was alone. He said, that's not good. So He made a family, the first family. And I know the first family, we think of other people. This is the actual first family. And so this is God's creation. He creates family. And then Genesis chapter 3, the wheels fall off. And the Bible documents humanity and its fall. And immediately, as soon as it happens, God has implemented a plan of redemption. So He is on it. And man falls. This is kind of the summary of the Bible. In the beginning, God made everything perfect. He made everything absolutely perfect. Then man broke every perfect thing God made. And then through Christ, God has restored everything that man broke. And so that is God's plan of redemption, and His redemption plan specifically here mentioned by the Apostle Paul to the church in Ephesus is Jesus is the plan of redemption, but even more specific, he actually implements a plan of family. The redemption plan is family. He says this, long, long ago, He decided to adopt us into the family, His family, through Jesus Christ. Now, if you keep going in the book of Genesis, you're going to find the beginning of this family that is a theme throughout the entire Old Testament. So Genesis chapter 12, you find God showing favor and friendship with a man by the name of Abraham. Father Abraham had many sons. And many sons had fun. Okay. I won't do that again. I'm sorry. I won't do that on Easter. You can bring your friends. God makes a covenant with Abraham. And He tells Abe that, listen, I want you to leave your father's family. Detach. Leave the hometown. Leave the home team, leave your father's family, and then what I'm going to do is I'm going to bless you with this great, big, new family. That's the promise. And He says, you and your wife are going to have boatloads of babies. And He looked at His wife, and His wife was one of the golden girls. And He's like, wow, this ain't gonna work out. So there's some bumps in the road, but ultimately it happens. So the entire Old Testament is different stories, different aspects, different angles on really one family tree. It's all the family tree of Abe. It is the beginning of God's people, Israel. It's all this kind of thing unfolding, but it's all a family. And really, this conversation that he has with Abraham is foreshadowing. And if you like great movies and great books and great TV shows, foreshadowing is important. It's useful. And so God is foreshadowing us, our story, our connection with God. And what he's saying is, like Abraham, he encourages us, hey, you are part of another family, the bloodline of Adam. In fact, we're not sinners because we sin. We sin because we're sinners. We are all stained with the sin of humanity after the fall in Adam. The Bible says, after one man's sin, all are found unrighteous. All are guilty. All are in a place of needing forgiveness. We all are. We're not born neutral. We're born in the bloodline that is stained by sin. And then Jesus interrupted that bloodline. And he inaugurated a brand new family. So like Abraham, he severs from the old family, and he inaugurates a brand new big family for all of us to be a part of. And then he starts the adoption process. We're all adopted as sons, as daughters, as family members. God is love. And his plan of redemption is family. That's the entire plan. How am I going to restore shalom? How am I going to bring back what humanity as it's meant to be? How am I going to reestablish the kingdom of God? Well, it happens through family. Us being a part of his. That is why we changed the name of our church about 5 years ago. In fact, we're like right at it. About 5 years ago, we changed the name of our church. The previous name was stupid. And that's my fault. I listened to my flesh. But that was the old family. This is the new family. And so we changed it about 5 years ago with the understanding in the mission that this God's plan of redemption is family. That's what we're here for. We're the family of God. That's what we're gonna live, what we're gonna own, what we're gonna wear, what we're gonna prioritize. And I've watched, Sonia and I were just talking about this. We've watched over the last 5 years this priority, this value, show up in absolutely beautiful ways in this community. I mean, it's staggering to see it happen, to watch that value in the way that you guys love and welcome and do life together. It makes me so happy. It makes me so proud. I've referred to myself many times as Frankenstein's monster as it relates to church and ministry and that whole world. I felt like I grew up in church and I was sort of I was sort of created in a lab to be a pastor, a certain kind of pastor, and everything that I was taught and shown and conditioned to believe about what church is and church success had to do with measurable, quantifiable metrics, things that you can measure and quantify, and you know, it's all numbers and facts and figures. And so that is what determines whether or not you're successful, is, you know, how many people did you have and how much money do you got and how big's the building and all the things that you just traditionally establish as success. And it's been hard for me to kind of detox from that and unlearn that. But the one thing that is displacing and helping replace that sensibility is the value that's been in my heart and something that's been visible and obvious in practice in this community, and that is watching you guys love well and being loved well. It is amazing. It's staggering to experience real, down-to-earth, genuine, no strings attached, unpretentious, real human beings doing life together. It's beautiful. I love it. It makes my heart soar, and it's helped me move past the old sensibilities that I was pre-programmed to have and realize I don't care about that stuff. What matters to me is that people show other people Jesus through their love and kindness, that others can taste and see that God is good because this community is loving and carries that. As we read last week, Jesus says that that's how we're known as Jesus people, is by our love for each other. That is what reflects Jesus. And I couldn't agree with that more. In fact, I got a quick story. I left my house. This was, I don't know, one day last week. Monday, maybe. And I mowed grass, and which is my favorite thing to do. And so I was out there, just the pollen was just, oh my goodness gracious. And I was mowing grass, and then I decided after I mowed grass, I was like, I'm going to take, we do recycling, and there's a little recycling center close to our house. And so I loaded up my truck, and I was taking the recycling to the recycling center. And I had to do a couple loads from my truck to the thing. And so I was coming back for load number two, and there was a lady, and she was elderly, and she was carrying one of the really tall laundry baskets full of recyclables, and she was struggling to carry it. So I went over and just said, let me have that. And so I took it from her, and it was as if I gave her a winning lottery ticket. Her response was, I thought, not proportionate to what I was doing. What? And it was just, she was very blessed. And so I was carrying it, and she goes, we get to the little thing, I dump it out in the recycling thing. And I turn to her, and she goes, you're a Christian, aren't you? And I said, yes, ma'am, I do believe so. And she said, I could tell. So we got talking, and come to find out she's 87, and she had lived on in the area for about a decade now, 12 years or so, and she goes to like three different churches, and they're all very, very different. And but it's, I told her, I said, that's a well-balanced diet. I appreciate that. And she said, and I could tell, it's just, she's alone, and this is how she does community and stays connected. So she just kept saying, God bless you. You're so kind. She's asking me about where I go to church. I said, it's a little church. You wouldn't like it. no, I told her about it, and she's like, I'm going to tell people all about that church. I said, well, that's very sweet of you. Anybody hear from Jane's conversation? No, okay, just making sure. She lied. Anyway, so I'm kidding. So I was like, well, God bless you. And I said, have a great Easter. So I go back to do the rest of my recycling. And I come back, and laying on my truck bed is this suit. This suit is vintage, 1970s probably. And I'm going to put it right here. This suit was laying on my truck bed. And so I carried it over. She was still there, trying to get everything together in her car. And she's like, oh, I was hoping I'd be gone before you saw it. I was like, you're 87. I don't think. Rushing is not what I want you to do, in fact. Take your time. And I said, I love it. And she said, well, I thought maybe you could use it or someone that could. And she said, it was my son's. I said, it was. And she said, he passed. And I said, I'm so sorry to hear that. And I said, when was that? She said, December. And so I was moved, and I had my sunglasses on, thankfully, and I'm because I'm tearing up. And she was too. And we shared a beautiful moment, and we stood there for a few minutes talking about him and just her life and all that stuff. And it was just this very beautiful, medicinal moment that meant the world to me. It made my week. I needed that one. And this suit that would have been like, okay, here, you take it to Goodwill for me kind of thing, unless anybody wants it, you're welcome to it. But it was meaningful because of that's her son's suit. This was meaningful to her. So it's meaningful to me. And I realized in that moment, we all need this. This is what we need. And this is what this world is missing, is these moments. This is the most antagonistic time that I can remember in my lifetime in terms of just being a human in this country, in this setting. It just, everyone's just, with social media, the advent of social media and opinions, and everyone's like just ready to pounce at the moment's notice. Like, I just want to hear someone disagree with me so I can yell at them. Living with that always in mind is just, it's toxic, and it's not a good way to do life. And I realized in that moment, this lady ministered to my soul, and hopefully she felt seen and blessed and cared for and loved. And I'm like, if we could just do this, and it wasn't extravagant, it wasn't extraordinary, it wasn't like I did anything. I mean, I carried a basket full of cans. That was it. In fact, I think if it's flashy, it really doesn't take. It's like too much. But just every day, just noticing and loving and stopping, it smells like Jesus. People can tell. Oh, I bet you're a Christian. It just radiates Christ. And that's exactly what Jesus means to say, this is how they're going to know us. This is how. Simple, everyday, common love. I've struggled letting go of the old mentality. But in these moments, I'm reminded this is what ministry is. This is what church is. This is what life is. This is where you know it's catching on and it's actually taking root and doing its work. When you sit back and you watch people love well, people like Steve and Beth Rudolph, who skip church to love well. And they don't want to skip church. They're one of the few people that don't want to skip church. I'm judging the rest of you. To love well. And I'm proud of that. And I see Jesus there. And to me, that's the calling card. It's not, hey, Chris, what are your numbers? I don't care. I don't care. The quantity at the end of the day doesn't matter. It's the quality of God's love getting a hold of us. He changed the world with 12. It's not quantity, it's quality. The harm that religion has done to me and countless others is selling us this lie that we need to do more in order to secure his love and approval for ourselves. That we have to work to find favor with God. That's the lie. The truth is that he could never love or approve of you more than he does. It's impossible. That revelation that right where you are, having done nothing in this world to deserve it, that you are loved, that you are held, that you are valued, that you are approved of by God, because not because of your goodness, because of his. That revelation frees us up to then love other people. That's what frees us to love other people effectively. Christians can be mean, but I'm going to give them a pass. Not really, but I'm going to give them a pass. I understand why they're mean. Because they feel judged. They live judged. Bible, when the Bible says, don't judge others lest they judge you, or lest you be judged, it's not saying if you judge other people, God's going to judge you. It's saying if you judge other people, they're going to judge you. It's just human nature. So we walk around just trading judgments, trading criticisms. Oh, you vote that way? Oh, you listen to that? We're all human. We're all sons and daughters and friends and brothers and sisters. And there's way more in common here than there is different. We're all God's kids. So they get a pass because I don't excuse the behavior, but I understand it. If you feel judged by God, if you feel like you're always under the microscope, you're going to treat other people like garbage because you feel like garbage. But if you know right where you stand, no matter what's happened and what you said during in traffic and what happened, what you ate and how little you prayed and read your Bible, and the fact that God still loves you as furiously and as passionately and as unconditionally as he did when you were on your best behavior, then you feel free to love other people because you feel freely loved. Freely give because it's freely been given to you. That's the way it works. That's the beauty of a revelation of God's unconditional love for you, is it frees you to love others without strings attached. Love is the motive, love is the message, and family is the method. Love is the motive, love is the message, and family is the method. Psalm 68, verse 6 says this: God sets the isolated into families. What's God actively doing? He's setting the isolated into families. Jesus' whole story about him being the vine, us being the branches, abiding in him, he abiding in us, bearing much fruit, is really a picture of family. He says the isolated, the alone, the solo agent, the single branch, disconnected, is not fruitful. Fruitfulness is found in connectivity, attachment. The concept of family, the conversation of family, the idea of family is going to hit us all different. The word family is going to hit us all different. We all have different stories and different encounters and different situations as it regards to family. Some of us have big, bold, beautiful families. Some of us really don't have family. Some of us have had very negative experiences with family members. This can be a tough conversation for a lot of people. Whatever your experience is with your blood family, the family you were born into or adopted into or married into, whatever your experience is with your blood family, the family that God, his desire is to bring us into, is one that is inaugurated and forged by Jesus' blood, not the blood of your family. When we say family church, it is not just, hey, bring your family to church. Family church is in itself a family. This is family. There's a lot of conversations, which was a necessary thing when Jesus' ministry was taken off, that, hey, you're going to have to leave your mother and your father behind and come join this new family. It's just the way it's going to be. Because your mom and dad, they're going to give me the old-time religion. They're not going to want to leave that. But your eyes have been opened to Christ, and they're not going to be okay with it. And so that relationship might sever. A lot of people lost everything. In fact, the book of Acts, which we'll read in a minute, has a lot of community sharing because people lost their families to the degree they lost their family income. The family business was cut off from them, and so they were now out there with no income, with no livelihood, with nothing, and no family. But Jesus was forging a new family. When he said, "I will build my church," that is ecclesia, that is called out ones, that is, "I will build my family, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it." I'm very blessed to have my family. I love the fact that my family, every one of them loves Jesus. I love that my family is, for the most part, relatively sane. Mom. But whether that's the case or not, we have family. We're forged, we're part of, we're grafted in, we're adopted in the family of faith. This family's eternal. This family's forever. And it should facilitate and carry a different kind of weight than any other family ever could. That we see things differently, we hear things differently, we empathize differently because we're on the same journey spiritually, not just naturally. The last name being the same or the family tree being the same, it can help with commonality, but the fact that Jesus died for you and he also died for me, that's a different kind of bond. Dallas Willard, who is a speaker and author, he said this: "The aim of God in history is the creation of an all-inclusive community of loving persons, with himself included in that community as its prime sustainer and most glorious inhabitant." God is building a family where he is the head, we're the body, we're part of his community. Acts chapter 2, verse 44 through 47 is a, we spent the whole summer on these verses last summer, but it's a beautiful picture of the church, the early church, the church before we created 6,000,003 denominations and other variations, and before humanity got its fingerprints all over it. This is the pure, untouched, unfiltered, potent new church of Jesus Christ. And this is how they did life. Acts 2, 44 through 47. "All those who believed were together. They had all things in common. They began selling their property and possessions, and they were sharing all that with everybody, as anyone might have need. Day by day, continuing with one mind in the temple and church always, breaking bread from house to house in homes always. They were taking their meals together, eating together always, with gladness and sincerity of heart, praising God and having favor with all people. And the Lord was adding to their number day by day all those who were being saved." This is family. This sounds more like family than it does modern church. Way more. I mean, I know modern church, well, we have life groups and we have... It's like, okay, stop with the programming. These are just people who were intimately involved in each other's life. "Dude, I am struggling. I am not doing good financially." Well, dude, all you got to do is ask. It's what we're here for. "I am health-wise, I am struggling. I'm not doing well." I'm here. I'm with you. We're with each other. We're here. You don't need to do anything alone. Life is not meant to be lived alone. This family was the priority. And the priority of each other was more important than material possessions and the priority of self and individualism and comfort and personal autonomy and like, get away, I need my space. It's like, forget your space. People are hurting. But I'm an introvert. I am too. Introvert does not mean I don't love. That's a cop-out. It means I love differently, but I'm still engaged. I'm loving, because that's what God called me to do. This community prioritized taking care of each other, making sure everyone's needs were met. There's a beautiful story. There was a college, a university that stumbled upon the stories coming out of a community in Pennsylvania. And back in the 60s, they did this whole kind of research project on this community. And the community is called Rosetto, Pennsylvania, and it's this little bitty community made up of mostly all Italian immigrants. And so what they found was Italian immigrants were coming to the America, and a lot of those same immigrants spend a little time in America, and then they travel back to Italy because they realized the priority of family had not caught on there yet. And so they went back to their country where the priority of family would be held in higher regard. But this community was built by these immigrants. And what this university discovered and the researchers discovered was people in this area, this very small community, weren't dying. The average lifespan in this community was off the charts. People were living to really advanced ages, like commonly. And so they had a lot of theories and philosophies, like why that's happening. So they had a hypothesis, they want to go test it. So they were doing all these surveys, and so they're going around trying to survey everyone on their diet. It's got to be diet, right? And some of the people, I watched a documentary on this, some of the people that actually were there present getting asked in the original research were still living there. Of course, they're still alive. And so they asked them, like, what'd you tell them? And say, hey, listen, as far as diet's concerned, if I'm going to die, I'm going to die with a meatball in my mouth. It's not going to, a little vino, it's going to be, we're going to live life here. It wasn't diet. They found the common denominator. This is the phrase they used. The common denominator they found in this area is that everyone in it, the people of this community, felt emotionally safe. That was the value. It kept coming up over and over and over. And the way they put it was, if I lose my job, this community is going to take care of me. I'm not working without a net. If someone is alone, they've lost their family and they're elderly, they're going to be taken care of. There's no risk. So as people feel like family and feel close and feel taken care of, and this community is operating the way that the book of Acts, the New Testament church, is operating, lo and behold, there's physiological effects, there's measurable success, there is life. There's health, there's well-being, there's longevity, there's vibrancy, there's celebration. This community parties a lot. They celebrate everything. One thing that I've learned running an event space is that, and I'll say it for me, I don't celebrate enough. People get together, I'm like, what are we celebrating? And they're like, my cousins, it's their 43rd birthday. And I'm like, we do parties for the 43rd birthday? What am I doing? To celebrate each other, to celebrate life, to lean into it, to smile, to giggle, to laugh, and stop just living like, oh God, 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 oh God. Everything's like that. You wake up in the morning, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God, and you plan out your day. You're like, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God, and you plan out your week. Oh God, oh God, oh God. It's like, where's the joy? This community in the book of Acts, they worshiped together, they heard the gospel together, they carried that into their everyday lives, they ate dinner together, they shared space, they shared experiences, they shared homes, they shared stories, they got their kids together, they did life together because that's, well, first of all, that's what God asked them to do, but also they found that life is richest when it's shared. Sharing in life together in an individualistic world on a regular, semi-regular basis, only grace can do that in this day and age. Only grace will prompt us to do that. Because everything else is telling you to shut down, and it's all about the smallest common denominator possible. And here's Jesus to say, I want you to open up your lives. Open up your world. It's only when we realize that we are fully loved and that we have God's undivided attention, He loves us, and we have all His grace, all His adoration, all His mercy. We have everything that we need in Him. And it's only then that we feel freed to open up our lives with others. When we feel fully cared for, loved, and that we lack and want for nothing because Christ is that sufficient, that we actually turn around and share with other people. And we open our lives with other people. Grace is unconditional acceptance and love given to an undeserving person by an unobligated giver. That's what grace is. It's unconditional love and acceptance granted to an undeserving person by an unobligated giver. In other words, the requirement is never measuring up or fitting in. You simply belong, just as you are. In other words, family. That's what it is. Grace is family. When Galatians 5:6 says that the only thing that counts is faith expressing itself through love, what that means is continually knowing that you're loved by God and continually sharing that with other people. You're loved, you're valued, you're held, you are welcomed, you are forgiven, He's crazy about you, and then perpetually, continually sharing that love and acceptance with other people. To receive people as family into your world, especially those who don't feel welcomed at any other table. I told the story last week about being blacklisted at a Christian school, a local Christian school. They don't care for me much. And I didn't say that for sympathy, but I appreciate it. In fact, I got the best response was someone that came up to me after church and said, as a guy that grew up in Christian schools, let me give you a high five. That is the greatest thing that's ever happened to you. And I said, thank you. But this is my conversation. And one of the things, one of the caveats was that church welcomes broken families. What? To me, it's like as if that's a very, like... That's a thing that people don't welcome. And obviously it is. Still in this, in 2026, there's still churches that struggle with that. And anyway, we're talking, the person that brought it up to me, and it was his kids, and they're being flagged by this school that brought up the conversation. And so we're talking about it. And I said, you know, I said, the church that I want to be a part of is the one that seeks out and excitingly welcomes the exact people that school keeps out. The people that got... I want the list of people that were rejected by that school because those are the people that I want to be a part of my family. The people that are struggling right now, anyone that's struggling with the idea of actually showing up in person at an Easter service at some church in Chattanooga, Tennessee next week are exactly the people that I want to invite to come and put their feet up wearing whatever the heck they want to wear, not having to perform, not having to fake it till they make it, come and experience the unfiltered, unconditional love and goodness of God for them right smack dab where they are. That's, to me, that's church. And that's the exact church I want to be. Receiving people, especially those who don't feel welcomed at any other table, at our table. Ephesians 2:19, Message Translation says, you're no longer strangers or outsiders. You belong here. Another translation says it this way, you're part of God's household. You are family. Romans 12, verse 5 says this, we are many parts of one body, and we all belong to each other. We belong to each other. This is actually a couple of verses after Paul's statement and encouragement not to conform. Don't conform to this world. Don't try to fit in. You don't need to fit in because you belong. Fitting in is irrelevant where you belong. You don't need to dress up and put on makeup and do your hair up right to go to your family's house. It's a waste of time. They're going to love you no matter what you look like or smell like. Or just, you're the family. You don't need to conform and fit in where you belong. Everywhere you go, there's this pressure to fit in. Family's not like that. Family is well aware of how weird everybody is. We already know. We already got stories. We can tell you stories for hours about how weird everybody is in our family. But we belong to each other. There's no need to strive to fit in. You already belong. I'll close with this. There's a movie came out a few years ago called Bohemian Rhapsody. It's a story of Queen, and it was really good. Rami Malek played Freddie Mercury, and Queen's one of my favorite bands ever, and some great music came from Queen, and Bohemian Rhapsody is one of the best. But in the movie, there was a scene where they were talking to a potential manager for their aspiring band, and they're sitting in this like outdoor cafe, and so their future manager asks the group Queen together. He asks them, "So what makes Queen different from all the other wannabe rock stars that I meet?" was his question. This is their answer. Freddie Mercury puts it this way. "I'll tell you what it is. We're four misfits who don't belong together, playing to the other misfits, the outcasts, right at the back of the room, who are pretty sure they don't belong either. But we belong to them." And then the other band members chimed in and said this, "We're family, but no two of us are the same." Queen gets it, where so many churches don't. Queen gets it, where so many churches miss it by a country mile. You're expected to fit in. Your conformity is demanded. You have to look like, smell like, talk like, dress like the status quo Christian person that we are presenting and profiling. That's BS. That is not at all what God had in mind when he said, "I'm making you part of my family." You, not a version of you, not a copy of somebody else. You, who you are, who God made you to be. God didn't spend a bunch of time designing a you for you to copy me or act like somebody else. He made you to love you, and who you are is a gift to all the other yous that he loves. And there's nothing more beautiful in this world than a bunch of people who are cool with who they are coming together to fix their eyes on Jesus together. That is the most beautiful thing that this earth could ever see. People being loved and welcomed right smack dab where they are. Because they belong. There's nothing that you have to do to conform. In fact, Romans 12:2 says don't do that. Don't conform. Be transformed. Let God get a hold of you and do something brilliant with you together with others. That's what he's doing. That's what Jesus is active. I will build my church. That is what he's actively doing. Last year, speaking of being unconventional and being ourselves, I take joy in preaching very unconventional Easter messages. It's my favorite thing. It's so naughty and so looked down upon. I love it. It's my favorite thing in the world to do. Chris, you're going to preach the Easter message? Yeah. Last year, I preached the Good Samaritan story. What? What does that have to do with anything? This year, I'm preaching another parable that seemingly has absolute jack-diddly-squat to do with the Easter message, which is ridiculous because this is all the Easter message. It's Christ and him crucified. That's all I care about. But last year, we talked about the Good Samaritan for Easter, and it was my favorite Easter service that we've ever done. Hopefully this one tops it. We'll see. But the conversation was about the fact that Jesus is the Good Samaritan. We're all taught to aspire to be the Good Samaritan, which is, I think, a good thing, to want to be that kind of person, but it's not going to happen. You're not that nice. You're not that self-sacrificing. You don't like people that you don't like enough to do that for them. The whole point of the Good Samaritan was someone who was at odds, who votes differently, acts differently, lives differently, looks differently, helping someone that could not be further away from them on the cultural spectrum, and sacrificing their own time, energy, and money to help them. It's not us. That's Jesus. The story culminates with Jesus carrying back this half-dead person to an inn. It's a respite on this dangerous road, this little inn, where then Jesus hands over this person who is beaten up, battered, and bruised by life and says, take care of him. And this inn is a bed and breakfast. It's just a bunch of randos who just happen to all be together, eating together, doing life together. It's a halfway house. Before we get to heaven, our final destination, it's a halfway house. And the little inn in the story is the church. It's us. That's what we are. God's going to bring people in who have had their butts kicked by life, who've been run over by religion and circumstances, who've been disenfranchised, kicked out, and disheartened and disillusioned, and maybe even lost their faith. Maybe they're just kicking the tires on something different. God's going to bring those types of people into this happy little inn on Macaulay Ave just for us to love them and to show them Jesus. This is my prayer. May we love like that. May we pull out the chair at our table and say, anyone and everyone's welcome here. Make room. Open up our lives. Open up our worlds. Open up our homes to let people experience his kindness and his goodness through us, everyday, ordinary, normal folks. If you're tired, if you're weary, if you're broken down, whatever kind of traveler you are, you're welcome at this family dinner. Always. Love is family. The message is love. The motive is love. Family's the method. It's how we do it. This is how we do it. This is the way that we do Christianity. It's as simple as this. Open up your life and let people taste and see that God is good through you together.